Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And with me, as always, is Ben. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing super well, Scott. You know me, Ben Bolin, a faithful co-host and maybe a person with a little bit of an impulse control problem.
Really?
Well, yeah. Every time we talk about a new vehicle or anything except for, I guess, Pike's Peak, yeah. I'm all about getting that next vehicle, taking that next ride.
True, true. Yeah, you're right. You know, you're right. Pretty much you're up for anything in this podcast, really.
I am. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that we work well together. But also, let's be honest, let's be objective. People with poor impulse control do not make the best drivers.
That's also true. Yeah, which plays right into what we're doing today, of course.
That's right, man.
So you want to hit them with what it is?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. Okay, today we are talking about automatic driving systems.
Yeah. Yep. So that removes some of your impulse reaction, I guess, out of it. Is that right?
Yeah.
Or does it? Maybe it works with your impulse reactions.
Oh, yeah. Like how people who already have poor math skills and grew up in the age of calculators just still have poor math skills.
That's true, yeah. But they get it done somehow.
They do. They do. And when we first started talking about this, the seed of this podcast was planted when we talked about some very interesting future technologies such as driverless cars.
Yeah. There's an article on our site about driverless cars, and there's a lot of technology out there it's kind of starting to make the jump or the leap, I guess, you know, baby step by baby step towards removing some of the control from the driver and actually taking it into, you know, strictly electronic controls. Others, like we mentioned, are you know, a mix of both. You know, it's an electronic control that alerts the driver that something's happening, or an electronic control that overrides the system.
Sure.
In order to make it safer in some way. But we've got a whole variety of things to talk about today. So you want to dive right in?
Yes, sir. I propose that we take this approach, Mr. B. Let's take a look at automatic driving technology that may already exist. And I think we'll surprise some people there.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll wrap it up with some nice words about the future.
Sounds good. Yeah. I got somewhat of a surprise. We've mentioned it before, but it's becoming reality now. And, something I think you'll be interested to, you know, stay tuned in for.
Mm-hmm. And so let me start off. Let me go ahead and kick this event off by letting everyone know about something that I knew about. And I think most people know about this, Scott, but most of us don't consider this an automatic driving system or an assisted.
What is that?
Anti-lock brakes.
Anti-lock brakes.
And these are, believe it or not, sort of what we're talking about, because if you think about it, and we've got this in our article, an anti-lock brake system does something that the driver would do if this system did not exist.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yep, you're right. It's a is that a passive system or an active system? Do you know?
Well, let's see if we can break down the process real quick. All right. So when you have a car before the days of anti-lock brakes, right? We'll call them the days of yore.
Sure.
Okay.
The
good old days. When you had your good old day car and it didn't have an anti-lock brake system, when you slammed on the brakes, the wheels could lock up. And that would, of course, send you into a skid. So what did you have to do to prevent that?
You'd have to pump the brakes.
Right. And for old fogies like us, we know that pumping the brakes is relatively an easy thing.
It sort of is. And the goal there was to maintain steering control. It allows you, because if you just lock the wheels and hit the brakes and you're skidding, you're just going the direction that the car is traveling. You're not going to be able to steer out of whatever incident you're ready to go into.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I just stepped on your toes here.
No, that's exactly right.
But yeah. Analog brakes allow you to steer through the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are skidding, you know, you still maintain control. But
what does
it really do, though? I mean, because I think a lot of people may not know exactly how intense this is.
Yeah, what the anti-lock brake system in any vehicle actually does is it basically does the pumping of the brake for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no offense to anybody who thinks that they are the king and the last word on brake pumping, but this is not a John Henry situation. The computer probably does do a better job than the driver.
Very nice, a John Henry reference.
Hey, I try.
Good work.
So, really, though, some people might say, ah, nah, come on, guys, this is just a braking system. But technically, it does qualify because any automatic driving system or assisted driving system, we're defining that as something that automates or takes over what would normally be or traditionally be a human occupation.
Sure. Yeah. No, makes perfect sense. That's a great example. I've got a couple of things here that I can kind of run down a quick list of a few things that I've got.
Lay it on me.
In addition, I found some information on a site called Event Helix. And Event Helix, this is kind of hard to believe, but they're claiming that you'll hear these claims all over the place, so you take it with a grain of salt, or is it sugar? Whatever.
Grain of salt.
Something like that. They say that by 2030, all major interstates in the U.S. are going to be expanded to have what they call auto drive lanes.
And 2030, eh?
Yeah, 2030. Now, that's coming up pretty quick.
All right.
I mean, that's 20 years, but that's faster than you think.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
We were going to have flying cars by the year 2000.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so. This is a strange thing, is that the idea is that it's for automated cars and commercial trucks that have these systems built in, these automated systems. And they think that they claim that the speed limits on these lane, in these one lanes, it's like a, kind of like the HOV lane is now.
Okay.
But strictly for automated driving systems. And they say that the speed limits could be as high as 130 miles per hour in those lanes.
Oh, because human operator error is
removed from the equation.
In theory.
Now, for that to work, I've got this kind of small chart here that Event Helix had on their site, and what it requires in order for a vehicle to have the system that they're talking about, the auto drive system. Okay, so you got your vehicle. You need of course, it's going to have to be vehicle. The vehicle's in front and behind you, and it's going to eat. I'm not clear whether or not they need to have a signaling system as well, or if it would just be you. So, this is the case where we talk about so many times where if everybody has a system, it works great. If one person steps out of line that does not have the system, that kind of throws a wrench into things, and that's maybe the true test of this, to see how it works.
We're talking about interoperability.
Yeah, exactly. So, better if you've got cars surrounding you that have this type of thing as well, as well as apparently guardrails and the roadway itself need to be embedded with these sensors and I guess just information gathering devices that can narrow down exactly where you are on the road, and they do that via GPS. So GPS is another element to this thing. Radar is another element because you need the radar, to detect objects in the road. And according to them, their system would work. The radar would detect anything that's higher than 3 centimeters in height on the road.
Wow!
So if there's a an object left in the road, like a muffler or something, which often happens, or a ladder that fell off someone's truck, or a person, anything that wanders into that lane, it would detect that. Also, there's another thing that it requires, and this is sketchy right now too.
Okay.
Right now.
All right.
Wireless internet. Now, you and I both know that the signal fades and there's places where it's just dead. It's not capable. But that's one of the things that this depends on, is because it requires current maps and automatic weather updates and, just constant updating of information, rather, for it to work. And if it doesn't get that information, continuously, right up to the very last second, what's available, there's going to be problems because that may give them construction information as well and backup information. So, if you're barreling down on these cars that are stopped ahead of you and you're going, like they say, 130 miles per hour in this lane.
Right, yeah.
That's going to be trouble. Now, I know they've got a bunch of I know for sure they've got a bunch of backups built in, and there's a lot of, big description on how about how they plan to cope with all of this.
Like redundancies
and
stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting site, really, if you get a chance to check it out. But it does require, a lot of different things, radar, GPS, other vehicles with this. Again, that sticky one, infrastructure that we talked about, where that's a big, big money thing.
Yeah.
And, where are they going to put it? How extensive is this going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess you have to deal with the accuracy, too, because
absolutely,
that's another tricky thing as far as I'm concerned, because they're claiming they have lane accuracy plus or minus 1 centimeter.
Wow.
I know.
They really?
Can yeah, that's right. They can determine lane accuracy plus or minus 1 centimeter. And again, that's that requires this wireless internet update, mm-hmm. the radar systems, everything to work perfectly in unison in order for that to work without without any problems, without any issues, and being able to avoid everything. But they have tested some of the, I don't know about them specifically, but these things are being tested that, they do work.
Oh, sure.
They work in a test situation, in a controlled situation, but how's it going to work out on the highway? That's my concern.
See, I can help you out with that, because when we're talking about this, astute listeners will notice that we brought up a couple of things that already exist, and we're talking more about integrating them into an effective and, most importantly, safe system.
Yes.
So we already have the ability to a degree, automate speed, and we just call it cruise control.
Yeah, exactly. We've got dynamic cruise control on a lot of vehicles.
Yes.
We've got dynamic cruise control, which is already out there.
Mm-hmm.
It works fine. It has to be calibrated. It has to be set up exactly right. And I know there's issues here and there, nothing major, but, you're able to set the distance from another vehicle that you're allowed to travel or that you want to travel, the speed, of course, and, you're able to maintain that distance. And, it does, it automates the entire cruise control system, I guess. You still have to drive, of course. It's not a true hands-free system yet.
Yeah, it's an assist more than anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a speed control, but it's kind of a nifty gizmo. There are other things out there as well. Do you have a list, or do you?
I think we should do this together. So why don't you do the next one? Huh?
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I got one more here. I've got a few more actually, but Nissan has something called the collision avoidance system. And if I take yours, just tell me so I can let you describe
it.
No,
please. Yeah.
Nissan has collision avoidance system that they're working on, and. Interesting thing about this is it's a biomimicry device where they're mimicking the eyes of a bee.
Weird.
In order to make it work, because that's
so smart.
So many different
facets.
Yeah, exactly. So many different facets on the eye, and it takes in so much. It gets something like a 300 degree view of the vehicle, which is pretty incredible, really. I mean, 360 would be perfect, but you can't really do that with the system yet, I don't think. But I don't know. I think it's. There's a chance that may come out. It may make it into production soon.
I think that really depends on where they can get the price point, because a lot of the adaptive or dynamic cruise control we're talking about, which is this brilliant idea, mm-hmm. is still not in very many cars.
No.
Just because of the cost.
Yeah, it's in relatively high-end cars. And, I mean, that's kind of based on your point of view, I suppose. It's on the – I know it was in the top-end Chrysler 300 for a while.
Right.
I don't know. Some
nice
was it Mercedes, I believe, had it.
Sure.
Of course, they were sharing technology at the time.
Mm.
Like I said, it's in the higher-end vehicles right now, but like all the other stuff, it'll trickle down eventually, as well as the cost.
Another thing that might surprise people, I remember I was surprised when we first talked about this. Way back, not quite in the days of yore, but a little bit more recently, radar. Scott, cars already have radar.
Yeah.
Some cars.
Yeah, that's right.
The cars for people who hate parallel parking so much that they would rather have an automaton do it for them.
Yeah, Isn't that amazing? I still am amazed by a vehicle that can park itself.
I would love to be in a vehicle, and as it happens, mm-hmm. Of course, that parallel parking system, we talked about this before, it's not perfect. It needs a lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the criticisms we get a lot about these sort of systems is very valid, and that's, hey, if you're ever in a city where you really do need to parallel park, the spaces are too tight for this system to work.
Yeah, because I think doesn't it need 1.5 times the distance of the car, the length of the car to work?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And usually you have one and just a tiny little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have, a full 1.5 times the vehicle, because that's pretty big when you're talking about an SUV.
Sure,
That's a big spot to find in the city, and you might as well be able to just pull in at that point, really.
Yeah, or buy a Mini,
maybe
just chalk your losses.
Oh, buy a Mini. You know what? Good idea. Buy a Mini and then simple. Find one that's twice the size of your vehicle you can park in it.
Yeah, buy a Mini and keep the automatic parking.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure that's real easy to just change that out.
So we've got we've got some interesting things here. Before we move on to some more stuff, I wanted to put in a word about the infrastructure. I'm sorry, I forgot it earlier.
No, that's okay.
As we said before, the interstate system, the Eisenhower interstate system, in today's dollars, I think cost like $128.9 billion.
Wow.
And those are just the regular roads, man.
Yeah.
No computers.
No, no.
That's just asphalt and guide rails along cliffs.
Yeah, that's right. We're looking for the XLS version.
Yeah.
You know, the top end, the GT.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive no matter what. And how extensive is it going to be? Because once you get out into, you know, some stretches out in, I don't know, in Texas and Utah.
Yeah, Nevada, Utah.
Exactly. Or are they going to continue the system all the way through some of those regions? Maybe, maybe not.
Oh, excuse me, Nevada.
Yeah, very good, yeah. I could see, I could see them instituting this in larger cities at first,
sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Smaller cities, and then kind of the, like we said, you know, trickle down where eventually it gets to everywhere. But,
Northeast corridor and then along the coast.
Yeah.
Major interstates.
But again, they've been talking about this for an awful long time, and so far, mm-hmm. haven't really seen anything outside of test facilities. It's not a criticism. It's just what's happening. It's just taking a long time.
We should What do we have any more present stuff?
A couple.
Yeah.
I mean, just to mention that you know there are other brands out there that do have some of this stuff.
Yes.
Volvo has a. They've had a collision avoidance system actually for a couple of years now.
Safest cars in the world for a while. Too.
Yeah. Correct. Yep. And Mercedes-Benz has a brake assist system, of course. You know they've had. I think they were the first ones. As a matter of fact, I'll shuffle my notes for a moment, but
I believe they. I think you're right, Scott.
They had some type of they called it the pre-safe system in the 2003 S-Class sedan. So they've been around, you know, doing this for a long time, seven years. And really, what that amounted to was, you know, measuring the steering angle and acceleration, and you know, just a kind of a pre-braking thing. You know, it allowed extra. I think it was extra. Let's see. Oh yeah, it also raised the seats, which is another common thing in these systems. That you know, there's. Stuff that happens inside the vehicle, like, you know, it'll bring the any reclined seats up to seating position to prepare for the impact.
Huh.
If it's imminent, you know, that you're in a better position than for the seatbelts to work properly.
I see. That's pretty smart.
Front and rear, because some of these vehicles have rear reclining seats.
Sure.
Ford has one. Ford has a collision warning system with brake support for the Taurus and Lincoln MKS and also for the crossover vehicle. And they also, Honda and Nissan are offering lane deviation prevention programs right now, which that's pretty cool because that's ballpark what we're talking about here. It's really close.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting out of your lane and it tells you, that's pretty, honestly, that's pretty advanced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be able to do something like that. I know someone's going to say it's real simple. Here's the way they do it. But, think about it. You know, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, we had, just standard roll-up windows. We had to roll them.
I know.
I mean, it's that amazing because, like, you're talking about radar. We're talking about, you know, cruise control that keeps a certain distance to the next vehicle.
We're talking about using satellites in space.
Space age stuff.
Welcome
NASA stuff.
To the future.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I think you know, lane deviation prevention systems are pretty cool. And that's kind of what we're getting at here with what, you know, Helix is talking about.
Yes.
Okay, that's about all we got for the current stuff. There's more out there and here and there, but that's hitting the major ones.
Obligatory nod to Space Odyssey 2001. I have thought about driverless cars for a while since we've been talking about them, and I just can't shake it, man. Somewhere between HAL and Knight Rider, you know, with Kit, I picture myself in a car and I already told it what exit I need, and I'm trying to escape. And then I try the manual override, and that little light comes on, and it goes, "I'm sorry, Ben, I can't let you do that." You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. It's telling you not possible.
I mean, how do I change the oil?
Yeah.
So
let's
talk about the future.
All right, this is kind of cool because this came out relatively recently. All right, and you know, we're a little late to mention this already because it's already happened, but the 2010 Pikes Peak race. You know about this, right?
Yep.
We talked about it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a show on it this year, but we did last year because there was a record run at, you know, that was happening last year, the real push for it.
Yes, sir.
Not that there isn't every year, but this year, if you remember, in that episode we talked about Audi. Do you remember that?
Yes, we talked about a very specific Audi.
Yeah, now Audi has quite a history on Pikes Peak. They've this year marks 2010 marks the 30th anniversary of the Quattro system, and the Quattro system just blew away the motorsports world when it came out. I mean, it was unbelievable what this thing was capable of, and of course, it just shattered records on Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
Okay, so Audi News this week, it's AudiUSANews.com sent out a press release, And it's all about, if you remember, we talked about an autonomous car that was mm-hmm. going to make an attempt at Pikes Peak.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yes, sir.
Now, they didn't race in the Pikes Peak race this year. And that's because they're still testing. But I got some good news.
What's the good news?
The good news is they are well on track and they're going to make a run for it, I believe, later this year.
So we're going to have, for the first time in human history, the possibility of a maybe it's too much to call it artificial intelligence, but mm-hmm. an artificial driving system may become the winner of Pikes Peak.
Well, I guess it's possible if it find, because the way I look at this, it's possible that this thing could find the cleanest, fastest, most efficient route up that hill, and it may break a record. Now, mm-hmm. it won't be happening during the race this year.
Right.
You know, they're going to test it, and they're actually going to do a run mid-November where they're going to attempt two things. They're going to have the Guinness Book of World Records, monitor a land speed attempt that they're going to complete at the El Mirage Dry Lake Bed in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And or another nearby location if they can't, you know, because of weather.
Yeah.
They also are going to attempt the Pikes Peak run, which it's going to be a new record. It's going to be a new record no matter what if it makes
right,
it to the top,
yeah.
because this is a brand new category for the fastest speed in an autonomous vehicle. And so far that has yet to be done because it's incredibly complex to get to the top of that mountain. It's
tricky turns.
Yeah, exactly. It's nearly 12 and a half miles. And they call it the race to the clouds. 12 and a half miles, different surfaces. It's intense. It's an intense race. So it's called the Pikes Peak Audi TTS,
mm-hmm.
and it will be making a run mid-November. And they've got a schedule at the end of the press release, which, you know, talks about, you know, continuing the testing. And they're out there right now checking, the route. Just after the race, they went out and they were kind of checking the route and seeing what's different, what's new,
mm-hmm.
The different conditions. And, they're gonna make some attempts at it. Now they've got what's really crazy about this is, they're replicating decisions that rally racers make at race speed. So this is taking the autonomous driving thing to the very max.
Yeah.
Right away. Like, I mean, because you're talking about a racing situation where, you know, it's like the seat of your pants type, decisions that you make, and it's based on what you see and feel and hear. Well, it's making these maneuvers based on these difficult road conditions and, you know, everything that's going on around them. So it's really a difficult thing for it to do. But what's interesting about it is that it's also you can see the future of, you know, like these assisted technologies and what we can expect to see in the future, because this is where it comes from. Racing is where a lot of things come from.
Mm-hmm.
This is no different. You know,
it's seatbelts, side view mirrors, rear view mirrors.
You know what, Ben? It goes on and on and on. Aerodynamics come from that.
Sure.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on. What came from racing and comes from racing. Mm-hmm. That's why companies spend hundreds of millions of dollars in mm-hmm. Formula One, stock car racing, IndyCar, you know, whatever it happens to be. The technology that they learn for the racing series translates directly into the automobile that, you know, you and I park in our driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no different. So when they're developing this, this autonomous car to climb Pikes Peak, you may think like, well, man, what's Audi doing spending, you know, whatever the dollar amount
is to
do this? They're looking farther down the road,
sure,
and saying this is where we need to go so we can develop these safety systems, and maybe even better than that, maybe we can develop the first autonomous car.
And we should also, let's see, there are a couple things we've got to mention, man. First, I can't let it pass by anytime we have an opportunity to mention the DARPA Grand Challenge.
Yes.
Because this is the big daddy mm-hmm. of automated driverless systems. And of course we know, we've mentioned this before, a lot of people aware of it, the Defense Department's research wing, the same folks who brought us things like HARP and the internet, and are building they're actually building the Matrix now.
Wait, what's this internet thing?
The internet is a series of tubes.
No, it's okay.
I think it's crank operated.
What'd you say? Something about the HARP? What'd you say?
HARP is a place in Alaska that does ionospheric research. These are the really, really, really smart people.
Okay.
And of course, it's kind of secretive, but, you know, I guess it's a necessity because it is national security, mm-hmm. but they've had this competition several times now. The last one that I have good data on was 2007, but places like HARP and companies like Audi are really, I almost said driving, are really propelling the
driving would have been fine.
Driving would have been fine.
Sure.
Yeah, well, one way or another, they're insert verb here, something to the future of vehicles. And you know, for a while I was dead set against it, man. I thought driverless vehicles were a bad idea because even if we get the infrastructure in, all it takes is one monkey wrench into an intricate machine.
You can say it, Ben. Just one clown.
Just
one clown out there.
One clown out there.
Screw everything up.
One guy who decides to go, no, I'm going to go manual.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm
taking over.
I can try out my turbocharger.
Exactly.
But I guess what we're painting here, we're painting a baby step future where you guys can probably tell that Scott and I are completely on the same page here. If these kind of systems happen, we're going to see them first in heavily populated urban areas. Right. And we're going to see them maybe expand outward from there and start to connect the way that major roads started to expand out and connect.
Yeah. And it'll be relatively slow speed in those areas versus the high speed. Like if they were to develop this in Utah, maybe, you know, you can expect those high speeds that you're talking about, you know, like the 130 in the automated lane. And, you know, because you just have the distance and there's not quite as many obstacle potentials other than, you know, maybe an elk running across the road or something like that, which would be awful.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, they've got the radar would detect objects nearby and, the direction that they're traveling, you know, it would calculate all that and supposedly you would be safe. But, I think that urban areas are where this is all going to start if and when it does start.
And the Scott, I changed my mind on driverless cars. You'll recall before I was, as we said, dead set against it. But I got to thinking, I don't know, maybe our producers will play some thinking music for me. And I got to thinking and I hit upon this. I looked up some statistics. You know, the majority of auto accidents, including fatal accidents, are attributable to human error, not to any fault of the equipment.
I believe that.
And so to me, it seems like we have this incredibly expensive, incredibly imperfect system, but we also have an opportunity to make the roads a little safer and save people's lives. I think that the long-term benefit is worth it, but only if we go at a very careful, slow, graduated pace, you know?
Yeah, don't jump in both feet first, right?
Yeah, let's not put sensors everywhere and then make some sort of cockamamie law that requires people to have an automated car by, you know, next year.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know there's – I mean, we know that systems like this track train traffic. You know, they monitor, the elevated trains that we have here in town.
Yep.
Well, they're underground at some points, but I know that they monitor bus traffic. They monitor other systems. Of course, you know, we've got planes that are monitored via radar. I guess it's kind of natural that, you know, cars would be the next thing that they try to tackle in something like this.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm on board with this yet.
I mean, would you feel safe? That's the question.
No.
I think that's a question on everyone's mind.
I really wouldn't.
You know,
I really wouldn't.
Would you want, if you have children, would you want your children to be in a driverless school bus?
No.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't think I would. No.
I think it's going to take a very long time, even if somehow, and we've talked about this before, I completely disagree with that 2030 number. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll happen.
No, to me, that's way too soon. It's a little bit ambitious, I think.
I think it's super optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you got to give it to them. They're working on it. And I'm sure, you know, if you're working on this every day, 20 years from now, it seems like, it's possible.
Fortune favors the bold.
Yeah, I mean, they know a lot more than we know about this, of course.
That's true.
And, you know, we're these armchair engineers, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we get,
saying,
you know what, though?
Saying there's no way, 20 years, no way.
People don't know about these new chairs unless they've been listening to some of the other podcasts.
Yeah,
you guys, we have these swank new chairs and we've moved up in the world.
Yeah, I'm not leaving.
I think I was going to stay here too.
Yeah.
Dibs on the VO booth.
Very good.
Okay, so
all right.
We got it now, I guess.
I think so, yeah. I think that about covers it. And really, I mean, it's kind of up to individual listeners if they buy into this idea or not. I like the manual idea that, you know, you say, I like to drive.
Yeah.
I like to have full control of everything around mm-hmm. me. I don't think I would even be comfortable in a system like that had, let's say, the dynamic cruise control. I would still be nervous about that. I would probably be hovering, waiting for something to go wrong on that, you know, just waiting. I'd like to see it happen, see it work, but I don't know if I could ever give it even full trust, you know, that you're just relaxed with the system.
We'll have to see. But I like what you were saying about individual listeners, because it gave me a great segue to
listener mail.
Okay, Scott. Jerry from Chicago writes in to say, "Hi guys, just finished listening to the show. I have not had much experience with superchargers, but I do love that whining sound it makes when you step on it." He recommends that listeners search for Terminator Mustang Cobra on YouTube. Jerry says, "I have the Nissan 300ZX twin turbo, nice one, mm-hmm. and I love it, so I would go with turbo. It just lags a little, but when they kick in, they really push you. On another note, one thing you may have missed is that one advantage of a turbo system is that you make more overall horsepower with bigger turbos, which adds even more lag, but you can always use a sequential two-turbo system where you can have a small turbo spool up and feed the intake while the large turbo starts up."
That's right. See, he's got a 300Z, right?
Yes.
Yep, okay, that's twin-turbo system, right? Mm-hmm. So he knows what the twin-turbo is all about. I've never driven a car with twin-turbo.
I have not either, and again, since we just talked about my lack of impulse control, I don't know if people like me should be in charge of machines
maybe,
like that.
Maybe not. I've driven a car with regular turbo, of course, mm-hmm. and then some just insanely powerful, normally aspirated cars.
Yeah.
And but never a twin turbo car. That's odd. I guess I've never had one.
Yeah, that's cool. I'd love to see that. I'm going to actually check out that thing that Jerry recommends there.
Oh, so, the Cobra to hear mm-hmm. the whine of the supercharger.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a distinct sound. You'll never mm-hmm. forget it.
So thanks for writing in, Jerry. I want to say a big thanks to all of our fans who are listening, right? And we want to tell you guys, of course, we have had a name change. You can find us on Facebook at Car mm-hmm. Stuff.
Yep. And we've also got a Twitter account. And it's probably easiest if you search Car Stuff HSW. That way it'll take it right to us. We don't have to narrow down the choices, I guess, at that point.
For How Stuff Works.
Exactly. Yeah, for How Stuff Works. And then we've got
awesome blog.
Yeah, we do have a blog. That's right. And yeah. I've been mostly just using that to update podcast stuff so you can catch up on some of the older podcast items that we talked about in the past. It's a history record, really. And we've also got a lot of great articles on our site in the Auto Channel. Check that out.
And most importantly of all, we have a deep, abiding love of listener mail. So if you have something you'd like to tell us about automated driving systems, driverless cars, or if you yourself are a driverless car system and you think that we have misrepresented you, then please send us an email. Don't hesitate. Our address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.